Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time. I'm David Goss, alongside Kaylin, Kyle, and Matt Doyle. No Andrew Wiebe here today.
I'm kidding. We miss you, Andrew.
Breaking news. Andrew Wiebe currently on trial to play center back for SKC. What's that, Anders? Oh, Tom's actually re-reporting. It's center back for LA Galaxy, of course. Andrew Wiebe, not with us today. He is...
health and safety protocols.
Always online, though. So if you miss Andrew in any moment, just go to Twitter and you can read all 755 tweets he will send between now and the time this show finishes
recording. Someone tell him to log off. Just go into Andrew's DMs, go into his replies, and tell him to touch grass.
Yeah. You know he would respond on Twitter.
Yeah, he would respond on Twitter about his hunt for the appropriate lawnmower, I guess, is the story.
Suburban person. Do you have a lawnmower?
Suburban?
Where do you live?
I'm in... oh, I can't actually... I don't want to tell people where I live. I just did. Anyway, I'm in Jersey, baby.
Bleep.
We're going to bleep that out. You know why Andrew isn't in studio?
Yeah.
Because he could not get another jersey from another PR team in Major League Soccer. That's what it is. Yep. So he said, I'm not coming in today. I got nothing to wear.
You are wearing an NYC. Are you now on the gravy train?
No. You know what?
Buy that?
No, it's because the guys on MLS 360 disrespected the jersey, threw it on the ground, and I said, not today. And that's actually, I love it. It goes great with my eyes and my outfit.
So one of the things that has been very loud on social media, NYCFC fans feel that there's too much Red Bull representation on MLS 360 in particular.
The drink or the team?
I think just the team.
Okay. Because it's a 5-hour show.
So are you willing to plant a flag and be a standard bearer for NYCFC and push back against the hegemony of Bradley Wright Phillips?
And we'd say the City Football Group as a larger entity as well.
Can I just say one thing? Everyone knows that I always give stick back to them. I just feel like I can't cheat on Minnesota and Inter Miami right now. That's
you think two teams is enough?
I think two teams is enough. I do love the Red Bulls jersey, but I'm looking at myself on the camera right now. I'm looking
swag.
Fresh today.
Yeah.
I'm feeling it. I'm digging it.
You are in New Yorker to your core. That's why.
New Yorker. I just haven't had a bagel from New York yet. I'm going to get on that.
Bagel.
You can't do the bagel thing. I'm bringing you a bagel on Wednesday. Don't worry. We've already talked about this. I still owe you an Italian meal. I was going to bring one from Formosa's Deli. I realized that was in New Jersey. So I don't know that totally fits the...
I trust Thomas.
Oh, I trust Thomas with my life. But her point was she's never had a New York Italian meal.
No, I haven't.
Yeah. All right, we can work on that. There's different ways to go about that. We've got a great show coming up for you. Huge weekend of MLS action. Biggest story, obviously, though, is the second leg of the CCL final coming up this week. And then, of course, we'll look around at some other stuff going on around Major League Soccer. Great responses to the tweet. So Andrew Wiebe did accomplish something for us on Twitter today. And so we'll get into all your questions and everything else like that. Anders would like it to be pointed out that he asked Andrew to tweet that out. And that's the only reason it happened. Anders, there's empty space right here. If you're feeling the need, just come on in and you could sit next to me. Doyle, here's your chance to talk about the New York Knicks if you'd like before we get into anything. Do you want to?
No, I mean...
you felt the PTSD of watching the Heat play well with 18 players.
Yeah, like to you and Tommy Scoops and Anders is now a bandwagon Knicks fan.
Did you see the picture of me and Ben Bear wearing the same thing, standing in the same pose watching the game?
I did not.
I'll send that to you.
Yeah, later. I'm glad I didn't see that. But like that, like the Heat should not be as good as they are in these games. And it's just miserable going against them because whoever you got as your coach, and you know, in Knicks case, Tibbs is a good coach, but like Spo is gonna out coach him. They're gonna have 15 different scrubs who are hitting shots that they shouldn't be able to hit. Jimmy is gonna go for at least 25 and 10. He's gonna get to the free throw line in like clutch situations. Like
this is Kalen's favorite part.
Five, six times.
So so here's the thing. The Florida Panthers upset the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, that was a huge upset. See, I can talk hockey all day long, guys. No, we're not.
And the Miami Heat upset the Bucks. So the question is, will Inter Miami follow the trend of Miami-based teams?
Oh, look at you. You turned it back to MLS.
I found it.
That's professionalism.
Do you want to talk about hockey for a second?
No, I don't. Okay. I'm done.
Cool. That's not your team, though, the Florida Panthers. You're a Lightning fan.
No.
Other side of the state.
We'll get that. We'll save that for another. If you want to know who I support, head over to my social media. Should we stick to soccer?
Yeah, we could do it. I was just giving you the platform as a Canadian. I love hockey, so I was giving you a chance to
do
bring
you
it
actually?
Up. No, not at all. I just never was grew up with it, and it's fine, but I don't watch it. Sorry.
You have three teams that are like right around you, and you never watch it. Not even the playoffs.
The only time I watched
hockey playoffs is some of the best TV ever.
It is. The only time I ever watched it was when I lived in Boston because it was such a religion up there.
The Bruins. Yeah.
Okay. No, never watched it. So.
We'll go to a game together. How about that? And then you take me to an NBA game because I don't watch NBA.
Great.
I have connections.
Yes.
Sold. Done.
Look at that.
You have connections for NHL or NBA?
Both.
I don't even have to do anything. This sounds
awesome.
You just
have to get me Italian food in a bag. I've been waiting for 4 weeks.
We'll go to Carmine's in Times Square, and then we'll go to MSG. So let's talk about good TV, CCL. Everyone knows there's nothing more dramatic. There's nothing wilder than CONCACAF Champions League. We're coming up on the second leg of the semifinals this week. So Philadelphia Union head to LA. That is 10 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday night, not Wednesday like it was last week. Tuesday. So keep that in mind as you plan your week out and plan your TV schedule and all of that. Tigres, León, that will be the other semifinal. That game is on Wednesday. BMO Stadium hosting basically a rematch of MLS Cup where Philly went and lost. I don't know if you heard, Gareth Bale scored. There's a lot of other things that happened. John McCarthy, the whole thing. Let's start big picture and then we'll dig into this matchup. Legacy game. This is one of those special moments for these clubs. Semi-final, a chance to go to a CCL final, something few MLS teams have ever done. Try and win it for the second ever time. Let's start with LAFC.
Yeah.
What does this mean for them?
If they win this game, or if they win this series and then go on to win CCL, they go down as the best team in MLS history based upon doing the double last year and then following that up with a CCL title, right? Like right now, 27 TFC, because they did the treble. They're the only team to do a domestic treble. And then they followed that up by going all the way to the final, again, like beating that phenomenal Tigres team along the way. I still think if TFC had stayed healthy in 2018, because it was, I think it was Michael Bradley and who was the little Brazilian right back?
Aro.
That was a center back pair.
They faked Zavaleta being healthy.
Right.
He was the dream scenario that he was going to start.
I still think, like, and they had, like, that Mark Delgado shot.
Penalties.
And then in penalties, like, they came so close. That is still the gold standard for MLS. But what LAFC did last year in winning the Shield and, you know, then winning the Cup, doing the double, and then if they follow that up with actually winning CCL, they go down as the team. They go down as the first team you talk about in the legacy, in the overall history of MLS. They're number one.
Yeah.
Is this not another, like, dig at Galaxy? Do you know what I mean? Like, if LAFC go to do this, no, but genuinely, like, if you're a Galaxy supporter, because even when I'm in Europe or you're covering big games, the first question people always have had asked me, had past tense, is LA Galaxy, what's it like being at the games? Like, it's such a iconic team. If LAFC can pull this thing off.
I'll tell you, I didn't even think about it in those terms. Like, the Galaxy are such a non-entity right now when you talk about the top of the league. Like, I don't even say dominance. Their competence was in a different era. Like as soon as the TAM era started, and by the way, let's recall that TAM was introduced to help keep Omar Gonzalez on the LA Galaxy, right? Like, he was the first TAM player. It's just like a different, it's a lifetime ago and they're not the same team. And like the onus is on, I don't want this to be a Galaxy.
Yeah.
Sorry. I threw that in.
No, so you mentioned the TAM era. I think you could also shift it now in this conversation to like the CCL era of RSL went to the final in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
From that moment on, there was more success for MLS teams.
Yes.
From before, the competition didn't really exist. Then it did. You didn't have MLS teams.
To be fair, the Galaxy won it.
They won a thing. Yes.
I mean, it was a different format, but it was the Continental title. Yeah. DC was the first to win it in 98, and then Galaxy won it in 2000.
Both of those were much different than what we have seen since then.
Yeah, but I'm not going to discount them. Like they
Yeah, but not having to go on the road.
For sure. But I'm also not going to discount them.
Yes.
I'm going to love to. I'm going to need a chiropractor appointment after today because I'm like this. The history of, I'm just learning as we go.
So 2013 resets it. And if that's the way you want to say of the CONCACAF CCL success era. And LAFC, to your point, will be the champions of that era if they win this because no one has done what they've done. So now you take it in the Galaxy stuff, DC, that's previous time of MLS. Mm-hmm. In this 10-year span of now new abilities of teams to sign players, build out squads, contend with Liga MX, TFC has done it at a high level. Seattle has done it at a high level, but not over the course of a 12-month span like LAFC has done it.
Yeah.
The first thing I thought of when we were talking, me and Anders, about this as a topic was Vela. Because I think with Carlos Vela, he came to LA. I think winning MLS Cup justified a lot of it. Like, he wanted to come to win. He wanted to build a club. He wanted to be happy. He loves all that.
He wanted to watch the Lakers.
I don't know. Chicharito's the one at every single game sitting next to Adam Sandler. So I don't know that Vela goes that often. But I do think for Vela, there's always going to be an unnecessary conversation with Mexico fans about what his legacy is, what his career is. Winning CONCACAF, I think, could shift that. Mm-hmm. If he brings LAFC over a Tigres in a final and says, I didn't have to go back to Liga MX to prove it. I don't have to play for the Mexican national team to prove it. I'm the best player in this region. I've built the best team in this region. I'm the face of the biggest, arguably one of the biggest franchises in this region. I think that resets stuff for him that I didn't know would be possible because I didn't think about it in CONCACAF terms of, like, you know, MLS and Mexico are different and he's not in the national team. And there's, it sort of felt like that conversation was over for him.
Yeah.
And now I think this brings it back up of, like, he could put his stamp down and say, I'm the best Mexican player in the world. And sorry that
and
I don't
have
play
been
for you.
A decade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's big. That's huge for a big player. On the other side, for Philly, I talked 2 weeks ago about the rare opportunity to get revenge for what just happened. Yeah. The other conversation we have to have coming into this is Philly's fifth cup, semifinal, sorry. So this would be Philly's fifth cup final if they got there. They lost in 2014 in extra time at home in Open Cup to Seattle, 2015 in PKs at home to SKC in Open Cup, 2018 they went to Houston and lost the Open Cup final, and then, of course, MLS Cup last year, they went to LAFC and lost in penalty kick shootouts. So for this team, this might be it. How, as a player coming into a game like this, do you handle that history and sort of reverse it?
We were just talking about this before, and it's hard because I think players are very different. If it's me, because I was always a competitor, I always wanted to win. If I'm going into this game, it's hard to not think about all the almost getting that trophy, but not being able to collect it. And that weighs heavy on you as a player. There's no way you're not thinking of that going into that game. There's no way you're not preparing without thinking about that as well. It weighs heavy on players, and it mentally drains you, emotionally drains you. And when you're in games, it physically does drain you, thinking, God, can we do this? If they go up a goal and then sit back in the last 10 minutes, that's going through your head. Okay, we cannot lose this. We got to get to the final. We want to play probably Tigres. Let's be completely honest in that one. No disrespect, but it's so difficult as a player. I mean, I've never been in that position. You know, the U.S. team always seemed to knock us off wherever we were in the world.
Did history that you weren't a part of matter to you? Like, for players who weren't there in 14 and 15, do they hear that? Or is that that's a different team, it's not me?
It is. You think, okay, yeah, it's a different team, it's not me, but it still weighs on you. Mm-hmm. Because it's a team still that under Jim Curtin has had success, but not the big one, you know, Supporter Shield. So that plays into a little bit of favor. And you've already seen early on in the season them struggling. So their mindset and their focus is this CONCACAF Champions League. So it's, again, going into this, when you put so much focus on something, and if they end up losing this one against LAFC in the fashion of obviously the away goal, because away goals count now, whereas in the Champions League, they don't, which I love away goals. I don't know about you guys. Yeah. I'm all for it. I'm devastated that they gave it away in the Champions League, because I just think
in the UEFA Champions League, by the way.
Not the real Champions League. Yeah.
But like, I just think it adds so much the dramatics in it. But when you're going to LAFC, I mean, the stadium, the fans, and it's no disrespect to the Philadelphia, because it's the same thing, but it's just, when you think of a Major League Soccer team, of where you'd want to play and the fans you want to play for and the stadium you'd want to play in, for me, it's hard to go against LAFC. It's going to be a really difficult game for Philadelphia.
And in the importance conversation, so the four cup finals. I just read through, didn't win, obviously losing MLS Cup. Bedoya's 36.
Yeah.
Was hurt, missed MLS Cup. They sold Paxton Aronson. Assumption is McGlynn's probably soon. Kai Wagner, it's been rumors after rumors. He will be a free agent. Olivia Mbaizo. You can't guarantee you'll get to semis and finals. You can't assume you'll be in MLS Cup. This could be it for this group. And you have to think that at some point that's going to be mentioned this week of like, Bedoya's leading you out there and he physically wasn't there for you 5 months ago in a final.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know where to go with that. It's like there has to be a sense of urgency. I think they had that sense of urgency last year in the playoffs. I think they had it for most of the regular season. They lost it down the stretch, which is how they lost the supporter shield. But I think, to your point, I don't think the shield was as important to them last year as winning a cup. But the thing with Philadelphia and what makes them really admirable and everybody's second favorite team is that they're going and they're doing this without Gareth Bale, you know, without going and spending $10 million on a Raúl Díaz type.
Zeller Ion.
Yeah. You know, like they have a real. Go ahead.
If they don't end up pulling this off, and I know this is what Philly's always kind of base themselves on, is the development of youth, selling players overseas, not getting those big signings. But at what point, if your ownership and your management and you're these players thinking, right, maybe we do need a Gareth Bale or a Carlos Vela to get us one of those trophies? Well,
I mean, you like.
Because I am, as a player, I'm like, sit my ass on the bench and get me a big time player here.
And we saw 2020, they won Shield. They didn't win the playoffs. They went out and they spent money on Daniel Gosdag and Mikel Uri.
Yeah, after selling Brendan Aaronson and Mark McKenzie for $20 million.
But that's their version. That was their version for this step. But you're right in that if they don't get over this next hump, what is the reaction, or is there a reaction from the club? Now, we talked about the legacy for LAFC. If Philly wins this,
huge.
Now it's 70 points last year, Eastern Conference champion, CCL.
So if Philly wins this, I don't think we can talk about them.
Unless they win something else this year.
I hate rings culture. I really do. And it's
sorry, I'm leading the whole segment on rings culture.
Right? I have like Olympic rings on my wrist.
But like when we talk about like the legacy of teams, we talk about the teams that win a lot and win a lot of different things. So I think with Philly, it would be we're talking about them at the level of like Seattle, where they're consistently excellent every year. They win something, you know, every couple of years. In this case, they become the second team literally in Seattle's footsteps to win the Continental title. And then you add that on top of the identity that you were just talking about, about developing and selling, whether it's their academy kids or whether it's, you know, back when they used to care about the draft. Jack Elliott and Andre Blake from the draft, man.
That's crazy.
And they stopped caring about the draft. Like, that's two really good reasons to keep caring about the draft. But like, and then like all these kids that they're importing, like they're going to develop and sell as well. Like, that's a really good legacy. I think they have that whether they win or not. If they're the champions of freaking CONCACAF and they're going to play in the Club World Cup, it makes it that much easier to talk about as an aspirational thing for other MLS teams and honestly other Liga MX teams as
Can Philly do it? Can they go to LAFC and get a result?
100%.
You think?
100%.
Get that same 3-3 as they got in MLS Cup and it's theirs.
I 100% believe that Philadelphia can do this. Like zero doubt in my mind. And I think they know that. Like I think there's a ton of confidence for them.
What do you give them? Like one chance in three?
What?
Like a 33% chance?
I didn't know what that meant. I thought you meant like if I created three big chances, would they score one? Yeah, I think that's fair. Maybe a little bit more. Yeah. I don't know how you come out of losing 3-3 without Bedoya against them in the MLS Cup and the performance in leg one and don't say we're here. Like we're even.
Yeah.
We're here. Yeah, we have to travel. We're on the road. Away goals makes it a bit complicated. So Kellen Acosta scored late on. That made it 1-1, and as Kalen has stated, away goals do count in CCL. So reminder on that. So LAFC are currently leading at 1-1. I don't know how, if you're Philly, you don't go in and believe that you can create chances and score goals. But the thing that worries me a little bit is something we talked about, which is LAFC have shifted their big game mentality, or at least they have other ways that they can play.
They're adaptable.
Yeah.
And that's the scary thing with this LAFC side, because usually when you see such a dominant team with the depth that they have, I know some people say that they don't maybe have the depth, which I think that they do, but they're able to sit in. And that's scary. So when it was in the derby against Galaxy, where they sat in, they waited for Galaxy to make mistakes. They waited for Ricky Pouche to turn the balls over in dangerous areas. And then they caught you on that quick counterattack. Yeah. And they have the players to do that. So Denny Bawanga can play both sides of the ball, but he's also great on that quick break. He's also good on the buildup. Carlos Vela starting to find his form, that he came out publicly and was like, you know what? I haven't really been good enough in 2023. Like, I'd say like last three games, he's come back since that derby where he was a crucial player for this side. So in Major League Soccer, and I think that's one thing too, because maybe you don't have the depth because you don't have the roster spots. Mm-hmm. You don't have the money in behind because of the salary cap, that usually a team plays one way.
Yeah.
It's either a high pressing team or it's a Nashville. They sit in, they know what they're good at. Whereas LAFC, they can play multiple ways, different positions, 4-3-3, sit in a 4-4-2 defensively. And that's scary for a team. That's really scary. And I think that they will do that against Philly just to weather the storm, because Philly knows that they're going to need that away goal. Go on.
And the other thing is that LAFC will kill you on set pieces.
Yeah.
And with a lot of teams that play pretty soccer, and like first and foremost, I still think of LAFC as a team that plays pretty soccer. It's like, okay, but we can sit in and weather that and kill them on set pieces. It's the opposite with LAFC. If like they start having the ball in your defensive third and you start fouling them, mm-hmm. and you give them restarts, that like they scored three goals off of restarts against Philadelphia, who was the best defensive team on set pieces in the entire league last year, the second best defensive team in MLS history. They go into MLS Cup, LAFC scores three goals off of restarts. Well, one was a throw-in, but you get my point. Mm-hmm. In the biggest game of the season. And like, that's ruthless.
And they also have the experience as well in big matches with LAFC. And I think that's why they've been so successful, because they've had players that have played in big moments. So they know when to just put their foot on the ball, take the cool out of the game, or that quick touch to build up. And that's why I think LAFC is able to sit in, catch him on a quick counter, or play pretty football.
Yeah.
Because you have a player like Carlos Vela that can read tempos of the game. It's really difficult to do as a player, where it's what does this game need in a big stadium where you can't hear the tactical adjustments from your head coach? You need players in your team that are those game-changing moments. And I think that's where, for me, LAFC just edge Philly a little bit in big game moments, because they have those big players that have played in those.
Yeah, Philly should have been up 2-0 in the first leg.
Yeah, that's true.
That goes to the Gazdag, Carranza, these guys, McGlynn even. Like, they had chances that right now Bulanga is putting away and Vela has put away historically. Philly needs someone to step up and have those moments, because they can't tie 0-0. They need to score goals. They need to go in there. They've been a little bit messy defensively, Doyle, so far this season. And you talk about those set pieces, it's like came from MLS Cup and has just rolled on.
Yeah, it's not the same team defensively this year. And I don't know. I mean, there were some issues, definitely, I think, against Orlando, where the disconnect, the back line of the midfield were so disconnected. There had to be like 25 yards between Jose Martinez and the center back pairing.
Do you think missing Blake was part of that?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay. Even in communication from that far back? Yeah.
100%. For me anyways, because I was a player that was either a defensive midfielder, and the older I got, I moved back into a center back role. And if you have a goalkeeper that has communication, it makes your job so easy. You don't have to think in a game, especially if you've been having a bad game. If you hear, it's the little adjustments, move right, player coming on your left. You're not having to have that extra look over your shoulder and that vision to be like, to think five steps ahead. You only have to think two steps ahead because you have a goalkeeper that's doing that job for you. It's so, so important. That's why you do see with teams in Major League Soccer, when you have a good spine of your team, like St. Louis, you got a good center back, you got a good goalkeeper with that communication, it makes everyone else's jobs that much easier because you're not having to over communicate because it's already coming from behind you.
So they need that in this one, right? Because you know whether it's pretty, whether it's, you know, over the top, whether it's restarts, whatever, LAFC is going to come at
deflected clearances,
right?
Deflected crosses to half volleys into the ground.
Yeah, so like the LAFC is coming, and Philly have to play at a higher level defensively than we've seen from them most of this year. I thought they were really good in leg one. I thought the goal was unfortunate, but like that's the margins against a team as good as LAFC. You have one, you know, bad moment clearing a ball where we're not necessarily on the same page. And boom, it's 1-1, and suddenly you're the one who has to go out there and carry the game. I don't think Philly mind that. I think that Jim Curtin, obviously you want to be leading heading into this one, but he's probably looking at this glass half full, saying like, well, I can guarantee that my guys are going to come into this game and play with the level of desperation that they need to.
You don't have to feign, let's protect a 1-0 lead.
Yeah, right? It's like, okay, front foot, go.
Just saying the two teams'
names, which scares me a little bit.
Yeah, gives me goosebumps thinking back to MLS Cup. It's the greatest game. Every moment, there's so much Jim Curtin running across the field, celebrating with the fans, thinking it was over. Andre Blake's look of despair after the PKs. Gareth Bale's celebration in the corner. Kellen Acosta's goal. Like, there are so many flashpoint moments from that game, and we get to do it again.
Yeah.
That's the dream. So 10 p.m. Eastern time. That one's coming up Tuesday night. They will see who they will face on Wednesday night, the winner of this. So we don't know which team will have home field advantage in the second leg yet in the final until we get all these results. León hosting Tigres. They are trailing 2-1 against Tigres. That one 10 p.m. on Wednesday night to set the stage. So Philly LAFC buys this week in Major League Soccer so they could prepare for this, which meant the biggest clash we had was at the top of the Eastern Conference, two teams not in CCL, so they can focus on MLS. And it was the Revs hosting FC Cincinnati. The two teams tied at the top of the East, now on 21 points. They draw 1-1 in this one. Biggest story, unfortunately, though, coming out in the first half, Dylan Barrero's injury, Doyle. It looked sort of non-contact, maybe slight contact, but he was crying on the field and had to be stretchered off.
Yeah, and he's put up, you know, pictures on his socials. He's in a knee brace and talking about, you know, a lot of rehab. Bruce Arena said, like, they can't diagnose it, or if they do diagnose it immediately, they keep it to themselves. But Bruce Arena said afterwards, it looks like a really bad knee injury. Anybody who's watched sports knows likely what that injury is. I don't think they're going to have Dylan Barrero for the rest of the year. It's a big blow because there are a couple of things that have made the Revs really, really good this year relative to Dylan Barrero's presence. One is their flexibility in terms of formation. They've been able to play sort of a flat 4-4-2 with wide midfielders. He's always one of those wide midfielders when he's available in that formation. And like that formation is designed to create space for guys to run into. He is the best on the team at running into that space, at undressing a defense, like crushing them and making them adjust to him. That gravity opens up space for Carlos Gil, for the forwards, all that. So that's gone if Barrero's gone. 4-2-3-1, that same principle, except he's a little bit pushed further into the attack. He's excellent. In fact, that was how they were playing this weekend. He was excellent in the final third of this year, played himself into the Colombian national team. I thought he was good for them the last break. They have no winger like him on the roster. There are very few wingers at his level in the league off the ball and, you know, on the ball as well. That's gone. But the big one for me, and we talked about this earlier in the year, when they played that 4-4-2 diamond, right, with a tight midfield and two forwards up top, whether it was Gustavo Bow or Giacomo Vrioni, it was Barrero who was the second forward. And what made it so effective was they sort of unleashed him to drift wide or to run through the lines, like a Chicharito style run where he's splitting the center backs. Like if Bo was dropping into the half space or Vrioni was coming to hold up play, Barrero was going. It was this really, he created like instant dynamic partnerships with all of the other like more traditional forwards on the Revs roster. And he made them dangerous in a way that you don't necessarily see from teams that play that formation. Mm-hmm. It's almost like how Aura plays for Philadelphia, where he's just constantly going between the lines, except Barrero's got more when he flares out wide off the dribble. Suddenly he's playing like a winger, even though he's a forward. It was beautiful to watch at its best. I think that's gone now too, because if it's Vrioni and Bo up top, like, they're good. They could score a lot of goals, but it's just not like you can plan for that better. You could defend against that better. I was texting with Kalen Carr, the other Kalen.
The second Kalen? No, I'm just kidding. C2. He's the first Kalen.
C2. Two C's, so C2.
Yeah. I'm C2, let's be honest. I know you're where
K.
I stand.
You're K.
Okay, I'll
you're
take seed one.
You're not K.
For my initial.
C1. Oh,
no. Call me yeah. Kyle. You just call me Kyle.
And Kalen called the game. And first of all, he said, like, it felt like a playoff game. It felt like a rainy, grinded out, sloppy playoff game.
I said this in MLS 360. I said, this game feels like a playoff game for some reason. Yeah. Anyways.
But, I mean, two good teams, right?
And they played at a high level, too.
They did.
They opened up. They went for wins.
But, like, both of us had the same takeaway at the end because of this Barrero injury. We both had the revs as, like, oh, this team could maybe get 68, 70 points. This team could win the Supporters Shield. Without him, I think their ceiling drops. Like, still going to be in the playoffs. Still almost certainly going to have a home game in the playoffs. Like, they're that good. Still going to be a team that could win MLS Cup. But I think without Barrero, they go from, like, among the favorites to, like, okay, you know, veteran, smart team that could get it done. And that's a pretty significant difference.
See, and I'm going to agree to disagree. I think he's been fantastic, and I agree with absolutely every one of your points. But I think one thing that Bruce Arena has done extremely well, and just speaking to some of the guys on MLS 360, that in training sessions, he doesn't really do anything tactically. They play games. It's a lot of 5-a-side, 7v7, and then full-sided games, which, I mean, as a player, anyone would love.
Dreams.
But as a young player coming in, I think that's what he's done really well. I mean, you look at Buck. He's been fantastic. I'm going to butcher this last name. Esmir
Arakovic.
There you go. Barakovic. Thank you very much.
Batrakterovic, I thought.
Akratarovic.
One of the two.
You looked at me. I didn't know I was.
Sorry.
We'll get a memo from Ben Bear after this one.
Yeah.
Certainly.
I just think that you look at this Rev side, and maybe on paper you're thinking, oh, they don't have that much depth. But player-wise, when you do see them play, I think they do. And I think you've just alluded to it. They're able to adapt into different formations where a lot of teams in Major League Soccer, you don't really see that, especially when one of their star men go out. You're like, okay, what do we do? Let's just go defensive. Let's just sit into a 4-4-2 like we've seen with Minnesota without Emmanuel Reynoso. They're starting to kind of change that as the season's progressed, but it takes time. Whereas I think here they have great. I mean, Polster, Buck, the defensive midfielders have been fantastic for me. The center back partnership has been amazing. But then also you look at this front four and who you can bring off the bench, whether it's Gustavo Bo, Esmir. I think that they have more depth than what they're looking for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just feel
than
like
a standard middle of the table MLS team. I agree with you.
And their 18-year-olds are playing, and we touched on an MLS 360, when you have a great academy set up and you have a great manager that gives confidence to the young players, because you don't see that very often as well, and gives them the 90 minutes, they can just step in and it almost looks flawless. And when speaking to Bruce Arena after the match, when he did go down, he said, you know, it's a devastating loss, but we got players that can step up, and we've trained them for these moments. They're ready. They've got the game match experience in these 10 matches. So I still think, you know, Supporters Shield is still in their destiny, even without Barrera. I think it's going to be difficult for sure. But I love this Rev side, defensively and offensively.
I think we probably all think they're still one of the top five teams in MLS. But I, you know, 4 days ago, I would have had them near the top of that list. I think I have them near the bottom.
Barakterovic came off the bench. He had the assist.
Right.
I think it puts a lot more pressure on DeJuan Jones and Brandon Bye.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all your creativity and width now that doesn't come from heel, comes from those two. Mm-hmm. It makes them more, it makes them one dimensional. It takes away, as you have said, the different options.
I'll say less dimensional.
Less dimensional. Those dimensions are still, as we say, better than most MLS teams.
Yeah.
And I will say on the timing, it got them through Gustavo Bo's whatever, right? He wasn't on the team the first few weeks. He was still in Argentina. He's still working his way back. He's given them a few match winning moments. He is now their other special piece. Carlos Heel has gravity. You know he's going to provide every game. What Dylan Barrero gave was another guy that you had to shade over towards, that you had to track, that you have to worry and can pop up. The young players, I worry for the academy guys on that consistency, like, they're not going to be able to do it every week like a Barrero was capable of. But I think now if you get Gustavo Bo closer to his form, if Vrioni has now scored a couple goals, I think there's more pieces right now than if this had happened a month or 2 months ago. We'll see. And they're already 21 points at the top of the Eastern Conference going into this stage of the season.
Can I give a shout out to our extra time researcher? New position filled by Andrew Wybie, I think his last name.
Work
is.
On it.
He was sending a little research to the group chat this morning. Clubs do get the ability to sign a player as a season-ending injury replacement. Now, I assume there is.
You don't really normally get a lot of resource.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. The interesting part about this, Barrero is their only U22 initiative. Signing U22 initiative, you could spend as much as you want on a transfer fee that doesn't hit the cap, and then pay him his salary up to whatever the senior max is, which is I think about $650,000, but that only hits the cap at $150,000. So I'm not sure whether if Barrero is deemed season ending injury, I'm not sure whether or not they get that U22 initiative slot open for the rest of 2023. Even if they do, I don't think they would be able to do anything with it until the window opens in July. But it's something to keep in place. We'll get our researcher again. The name is Andrew
Dweeby.
Dweeby. There was a non-silent D.
Yeah, it's that classic Mennonite D that always precedes the W in that one. Let's just, before we go away from this one, FC Cincinnati went on the road. They got a 1-1 draw. Shout out to Mascaro, by the way.
Yeah.
He was the one next to Barrero when he got hurt. He was very emotional about it. He comes back, scores. My understanding is he went and met with Barrero after the game. He reached out.
I didn't think it was a dirty tackle.
No, it wasn't at all.
It was a playoff tackle. It was a hard tackle, like going for the ball.
But you could see the emotional moment for him of like, and we actually heard this, I think it was the Chicago Red Bull game, of like, they're both young Colombians in this league. I think he felt really bad about what happened to Barrero. He was almost in tears himself, like on the side of the field. He reached out to the front office and wanted to go meet Barrero.
By the way, that's class, because there's some players that don't do that.
It doesn't matter to them. Yeah, it's not their problem. Like, and that's not wrong problem. Either.
Yeah.
He's not your teammate.
I will never forget
Stu Holden's story about Nigel De Jong.
If it's a season-ending injury, if it's a major injury, I just think it tells me a lot about the person and the player second, but the person of who they are. And that's someone that you want on your team.
Yep. And
I think it's so classy.
And it tells me a lot about the culture 100%. At Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Chris Albright and Pat Noonan deserve all the credit in the world. They have, I think, you know, they have kind of made it a point to build a club full of guys who play hard. They're competitors, and you see that every week now, but they're also like that.
Yeah. So they played hard, drew 1-1 on the road against the team tied at the top of the East. That's fantastic.
Yep.
But only scored one goal, created a fair amount of chances, I thought, in the first half. Brenner was not on the field. We know Brenner is going to Udinese. They are saying he is still a part of FC Cincinnati until then. Do you think he plays another game for Cincinnati? Do you think they need him to play more games?
I don't think it's a mistake that they're suddenly looking better going forward now that he's not out there. Again, just like from a tactical point of view, he was not doing anything off the ball except checking deep and pointing to his feet. And like, he's
good feet.
I mean, he's got good feet. He's got good feet, but you need a forward to be a forward. So, and Santos is relentless. Obviously, he's, you know, not clinical in the final third. And his decision making can sometimes leave a bit to be desired, but like, he's out there. He's so tough to play against. He opens up the field for Lucho and Brandon Vasquez. I don't see the need to bring Brenner back.
I'm on my white picket fence with this. Okay. I'm thinking
you are suburban.
I am suburban.
Pure Jersey right there.
It's a tough one, because if you look at Cincinnati, you're thinking, okay, I have a guy that is going to Udinese in the next window, right? So we still have him for a few more months. If he's not playing, that's an extremely long offseason. So as a player of Brenner, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to a new team. I don't want to get hurt because I want to give myself the best chance. But I also want to get minutes so I'm not extremely unfit or pick up an unnecessary injury when I do go into preseason with my new team, because they'll obviously have their offseason as well in the summer. So that's potentially what, 4 months of an offseason, which is a very four roughly
May, June, July.
If he's not playing now,
it would be 4 months.
Played in a month.
Yeah.
About 4 months of an offseason, which is extremely difficult. Even 2 months of an offseason.
It's also an offseason coming out of, like, he had only played four weeks because
he had an extended offseason, right? Because
Yeah.
So at one side of it, if I'm Brenner, I'm thinking, okay, you're not getting your match fitness in training sessions because it's just, you don't get that. That's why you have your preseason. Then you have games within your preseason. And then as a player, if I'm on the team and I'm Cincinnati and I know when he's on, he's scoring goals, he's banging goals. What was it? 18 last season?
Yep.
One only this season. I'm thinking, okay, if he's not in my position, obviously, this is a very selfish thing to think of. I'm thinking...
Sergio Santos not thinking.
Yeah, Sergio Santos isn't thinking this. Everyone Brandon else. Vasquez is not thinking this. But as a team that you're thinking, okay, we're second right now in the East. Let's use all the power we can to keep us high up the table, get goals. I know he hasn't scored a lot, and maybe there's other things that we don't know about behind the scenes that plays a factor of why he's not playing. And then on the flip side, I'm thinking as a manager, as a general manager, as a player... Give Sergio Santos the 90 minutes. Yeah. Get these guys confident so when we are without Brenner, it's seamless. So it's tricky because I'm thinking selfishly on both ends of it as, okay, I'm putting myself in a player aspect and a manager aspect that you want to give your team the best opportunity moving forward without Brenner. But I'm also thinking selfishly as well, okay, I want to put the team in the best possible situation. If he can score 6 or 7 goals before he leaves, like obviously he hasn't really showed up this season. So maybe there is stuff behind the scenes that we don't know about.
It'd be interesting to see how it happens.
Yeah, it's a tricky one all around. But yeah, that's what I got to say on it. I'll stay on my white picket fence. I didn't give you an answer.
In Jersey,
I feel
though.
Like, no, you have really set the bar for having takes your first 2 months on Extra Time. So I like that you're now, you know, evolving into...
Oh, I came in hot and aggressive. I was like, I'm right. And then I'm like, wait a minute. These guys have been around for ages.
Probably not going to end up on 55 points. But now, you know, you've learned to have an Andrew Wiebe style.
Ooh, don't compare me to Wiebe.
Hey, you know, he's gone.
I love
Wiebe. So
Andrew, I love
somebody.
You. I love you.
I just want to say, unfortunately for you, that white picket fence in Jersey, it browns really quickly because of all the pollution. So
I don't even have a fence in Jersey right now. My backyard's open. Why do we not have fences in Jersey?
The garden
so
state.
Weird.
The state bird of New Jersey is the mosquito. It's a beautiful place. Let's move
so disrespectful.
To another match.
He's from Long Island. He does not get to talk like that about other places.
When's Andrew back?
Shout out Nealis Brothers. Let's get another Nealis in MLS. We need more Massapequa energy. Let's move to a big match from this weekend, though. Nashville knocking off Atlanta to open up Saturday's that standalone game at the beginning of Saturday. This is a rivalry game. I'm not asking you. I'm telling you.
Is it?
This is a rivalry match.
Didn't feel like it.
It's geographically located. It is rivalry.
Give
We're going to make up a
it.
Name.
No, give
Someone,
us one.
I don't know anything about this region of the world.
I thought you said you're funny. Come on, be witty.
I got nothing for you. Oh. Sorry. I also have never said that, so I don't know
why. I said that.
Oh,
I think you're extremely
it.
Funny.
Oh, well, don't.
I think you're witty.
This is another one of your bad hot takes, David. Not funny,
you
not witty.
You can't make me perform on your expectations. If I don't say it, then it's not true.
I just set the bar high for you guys.
All I know is Chattanooga's in between the two of them.
Correct.
So is it the Chatterbox?
Oh, that's terrible.
I didn't mind it.
See? This is why Kaylin likes me. Because she has the same sense of humor.
You can exit stage right.
The Nooga. I don't know. I don't know
we'll
anything
figure it
else
out. We'll
about
figure.
These
you
two
guys
players.
Tweet at us and let us
definitely,
know.
We definitely need, I think we're going to need Nashville and Atlanta fans to either text us or email us or tweet at us and tell us
or
whether
something.
Whether, yes, carrier pigeon. This is
our landline.
Because El Trafico, that's
a rivalry.
That's amazing. So whoever thought of that name, amazing.
Yeah. So is this a rivalry one? And
I thought it felt like it in the building.
If
I thought
so,
it was loud.
What is the name? Okay, I'm done.
Yeah. So I think the first time they played, it was the second Nashville game ever. That's when Joseph tore his knee right before COVID, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think we were kicking around some hot chicken stuff and fried chicken and
Nashville
whatever
hot
else.
Chicken is elite.
Yeah.
So, if we were power ranking every city,
Doyle loves Nashville.
Every city in MLS based upon their signature food. Nashville might be number one.
Really?
Yeah. Nashville hot chicken is incredible. It's so good.
Doyle and Nashville hot chicken's like Tom Thibodeau and
you
Jimmy
know what
Butler.
29 is? We all know what 29 is.
What?
Skyline Chili. Since he's 29th.
What is Skyline Chili?
Skyline. It's a Cincinnati delicacy. It's a chili with a little bit of cinnamon. So there's a sweet curve to it and they serve it over spaghetti.
It's not very nice. Okay. Moving on. Got it. I'm not really a chili.
I will promise you. You will hear from it from FC Cincinnati fans about that in the next 48 hours.
Okay, cool.
They feel very strongly about it. And they like to talk about it quite a lot. I've never had it, if I'm being honest. You've not had it.
I have not had it in Cincinnati, yeah. But I've had it.
Well, then you don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
How can you judge things that you don't know?
You have to eat it out of a sewer by the stadium in order to get the real experience.
If you don't get the whole, it's like, yeah, when you're sitting in Italy and you know the fields are in front of you, the wine tastes better. That's the same with Skyline Chili.
Exactly.
So that's the experience. Big day for Nashville, though. Big win.
By the way, you're never coming back. They're never going to let you come back and host.
And host this show. They got nowhere else to go. Don't worry about it. We're good. Let's dive in deep, though, to DC United, because DC got another win, 3-0.
Shouldn't we do just a minute on that big rivalry game?
Nope. That's the rivalry. That's what makes it a rivalry.
It's the food rivalry.
You don't even need to talk about the game.
I'm gonna commandeer this for just a moment. I give Gary Smith a lot of stick on this show and in my column because I think they're too one-dimensional the way they play. I think they have settled too often for just being against the ball, and that puts them in a situation where if they ever trail, they're in really tough shape because they can't break teams down that sit back and like demand that they play the game. I think over the past 2 weeks, first against LAFC and then in the start of this one, they did a really good job of coming out and trying to set the tone by using the ball. A lot of it revolves around having Dax McCarty in good form, playing him as a six because he's such a great passer of the ball. But I also thought that after setting the tone in this one, he did a good job of recognizing that Atlanta's fullbacks were just like bombing up the day. And like, okay, we're playing in a diamond. We don't have wingers. If the fullbacks are going to come up that high, let's just give Atlanta the ball. Let's drop into a 4-2-3-1 and we'll have Picot on one side and Alex Mouil on the other side. We'll just let them attack that space. And around the 25-minute mark, they did that. They scored 10 minutes later. The game was over.
If this game has not taught us anything, the game has taught us something, excuse me. Atlanta United, keep your good players healthy. Only two losses on the season. The first one without Miles Robinson and Almada, and this one without Giakoumakis and Brad Guzan. That tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah. They have zero depth. The opposite of everything we just said about the Revs. The project for Atlanta is going to be developing their talent pipeline because they like that's a talent rich area and they have not gotten we're starting to see maybe something with Machop Chol, but like they have not gotten enough out of that over the years. It's going to be a multi-year process. I don't think that Almada and Miles Robinson are going to be here for the next iteration of it, but it is the difference between I think them in 2023 and the Revs, Cincinnati, even certainly Seattle and LAFC, those teams, like they've been able to create more depth where they can handle a game without their best players. Nashville were just so much better than Atlanta in this game, period.
Nashville's so dangerous now. They let CJ Sabong score for another team. They don't even care.
We're ready for you to move on now.
Do you want to talk about DC United?
Yes.
Okay, so I was trying to help you two talk about the thing you wanted to talk about when Anders wanted us to talk about it.
But we wanted to talk about that game as well.
If that was like a team from there. A city that didn't make hot chicken, Doyle would have moved on and not said 100%. Anything. But he had to pull it back 100%. So that he's always safe when he goes to Nashville.
I would have had nothing to say about Dallas in that situation.
DC United, 3-0 win over Charlotte. Benteke, maybe the goal of the year, definitely the goal of the weekend on a bicycle kick. James Lambert, shout out to James. On Twitter, ask us, isn't it great to be able to watch Russell Knauss as a true six go ball and then getting the ball to the eights like Klitsch and O'Brien? Yeah. Is this the first time since 2018 that he's in his natural role and partnered with complementary players? Doyle, it fits right now.
I was on the Russell Knauss train in 2018. Me and Bobby Warshaw were on the Russell Knauss train so hard in 2018. And just like the dysfunction within DC United, really like sidetracked or derailed his career for half a day. He had some injuries as well. But now, as James said, Knauss is sitting as the six. Yeah. He's winning the ball. He's doing like Tyler Adams stuff, like destroy, shuttle the ball up to the more creative players, shuttle it out to the wing backs. And it's working. And it's working within the scope of Cleek has been really good. They got Lewis O'Brien. He's looked really good over the past few weeks, like combative two-way midfielder. Like obviously Wayne Rooney's going to like that guy. But like part of it is, and this is interesting because we don't see it that often. Wayne Rooney came into the season asking his center backs to initiate sequences of possession, trying to be a team that plays with the ball like Seattle or like Columbus. The Galaxy or Columbus, you know, the Galaxy try to, Columbus do. And it was not working. Mm-hmm. And over the past 3 weeks, they've gone 3-0. Now, granted, small sample size, 1-2, is that none of the three teams they beat are at, you know, great. But
gotta beat someone.
They're now hitting fewer passes per game. They're hitting more long balls. A higher percentage of their passes are long balls, and it's working for them because Benteke is absolutely dominant. And from a player's point of view, Kalen, you come into the season thinking we're going to play one way. 6 weeks, it's not working, and you switch. Are you like, oh man, he doesn't have confidence in us? Or is it like, oh, nope. Okay, completely we're figuring
opposite.
It out.
Yeah, completely opposite. I have respect for my manager, because if you're a player and you're losing, you're not, you know, playing to your strengths. This is what makes a good manager great, or a manager like Wayne Rooney that's played at the highest level. Because sometimes you don't see that. You see managers, you know, that have played at the highest level.
They have their ideology.
They have their ideology, and they will not change from that. Yeah. They're thinking, I've won everything that you can win. I was one of the best players in the world, and this is how we're playing. And if you can't play like this, you're not good enough for me.
Yeah.
And we've seen that. We've seen that with coaches in Major League Soccer that have done that. And Wayne Rooney came in and said, this is the squad I have. It's not working. So let's put players into the best positions and the formation that works the best for the team and make us successful. And for me, when it was Jacob Green that came off the bench, yep, and scored, the 20-year-old. And when he scored the goal, it told me everything I needed to know what Wayne Rooney is creating at DC. The way they celebrated after he had scored, it was
like they had just won MLS Cup. They went berserk.
But they... that the togetherness, yeah, of
he
that
comes
team,
to the bench. He literally ran to the bench, and it feels like Birnbaum's at the center of that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we saw Paredes already cry when he left talking about Birnbaum. It feels like he is they're going to be a young group. He's the core emotionally of like DC United.
But that's what I love, though, because everyone's bought into this new system of Wayne Rooney. Everyone's bought in. Maybe it's not the way that you want to play that beautiful style of football that he wanted to implement, but sometimes if you're winning games, that's beautiful, mm-hmm, enough, baby. Oh, yeah. And you're winning by 3 goals, and you're winning by unbelievable goals as well.
Nothing's Benteke, prettier than the scoreboard.
No, Benteke, it was last week where he took that cheeky little double touch and then shiveled his hips and scored. And then this one, a bicycle. Like, this team, for me, if they can continue to build on this new system, this new playing style, this new playing module under Wayne Rooney, it's going to be a scary team and a difficult team to beat because of the togetherness.
Yeah. And it feels like there's a decent amount of pieces on this team who have been played out of position or in uncomfortable positions for a little while. Mm-hmm. And so that's also going to feel, if you're Pedro Santos, you're not a left back, right? No. So you don't want to defend 1v1 from deep consistently, but you're not creative enough anymore. You can't beat enough guys 1v1 at the winger position. Mm-hmm. Now you're playing left wing back. Your life becomes easier.
Yeah.
We talked about Canales. You talk about Nahar or Juan if he's in, right? Those are all guys where they are now in their most comfortable position. I think for Birnbaum and Pines as well, they struggle 1v1 defending. You bring another center back in there, you make spacing more of an issue, and Birnbaum can sort of just lead. I don't know that Paulson's that guy. He seems to be sort of one of the weird ones out, but we saw Nahar play there in the past. You can bring in other pieces. Now you can rotate Paulson. And it feels like a lot of players in this team are in positions that make them comfortable. And that's fun.
Yeah.
I've just looked at the schedule now. It's going to be a difficult task. This will tell the story the next 3 games, other than I'm going to take the U.S. Open Cup out of it.
But it's an Atlantic Cup rivalry match.
They play Cincinnati away. Play Nashville at home. And then they play Philly away. So this will show me how together this team is, because those are 3 very difficult games coming up after coming 3 off the bounce with wins.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting.
One more point I want to make. It's wild to me that they went to a 3-5-2 with a ton of crosses to Benteke, who set like a record in the Opta database for most aerial wins this week. He won like 15 aerials.
Well,
going to slide down here.
Did they go to?
I think it was week one that me and you were going. I was like, nope. Klaus is a bigger, better target number 9 in
two
the box.
Two things can be true. They play awesome in different teams. They're in different games.
But the point is, with him being this dominant and then being so committed to now like playing this way, they traded Julian Gressel 8 months ago.
Yeah.
Julian Gressel is the best crosser of the ball, volume wise, in MLS history.
Imagine if he was there.
Yeah. Benteke would have 15 goals already.
He'd be like, give it to Gressel. Just give the ball to Gressel.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. It helped, by the way, that Derek Jones played center back. in this game because Charlotte had some injury concerns. So that didn't hurt in winning 15 aerials. And you could see on, I think it was the bike kick, Jones is like tripping on himself because he's just trying to recover and figure it out. And it's been a tough run for Charlotte, and they've got some recovery that they need to do as well. Let's jump into some big teams like DC, but maybe a little bit newer to the winning streak, where there was a couple teams that we've talked about over the last 2 months where it's like, this team's in a bad way. And a lot of them won this weekend, and it felt like a turnaround win. So let's start with the Portland Timbers. This for them, less new. They beat Seattle. They went to Cincinnati and lost. They won an Open Cup. Now they go to St. Louis. They win 2-1. So three of the last four, and two of those wins have been against the top two teams in the Western Conference in Seattle.
It's very MLS. It's like pure MLS. They like be...
You mean St. Louis, the darling of everyone, is now 1-3-1 in their last five?
Yeah, after a perfect March, they won one out of five games in April. No, Portland, rather, they are getting some pieces back. Jimmy Chara scored the game winner in this one. Frank Bolli has been good, like a true center forward. Evander looked a little more comfortable, I think. David Aishala, the young D-mid, he did get hurt. He got carted off. Paredes comes back. I thought Paredes played really well in this game. So that credit to Gio Savarese for diffusing whatever was going on with Aljaž Ivasić, because a month ago, like, he was being like, Ivasić was sniping at Savarese in the press. He wasn't starting. It was like, it looked like it was all going to fall apart. It clearly hasn't. It has gone in the other direction. They deserve a ton of credit for that. And they deserve a ton of credit for being the type of team that can recognize when their season's, I don't want to say in the balance a little bit, but like kind of teetering. And they came out and they kicked St. Louis's. There were 100 duels. Portland won 60 of them. And that's not tactics. That's will. That's, and if you look at like the build up to the penalty kick, it's a punt from the goalkeeper or long ball from the goalkeeper. Portland win the 50-50, off to the races, you know, put St. Louis on the back foot. You make your own luck, right? And then the second one, punt from the goalkeeper, midfield 50-50, Portland's off to the races.
2 minutes after conceding as well.
2 minutes after conceding. And, you know, really well-placed shot, well-taken shot from Jimmy Chara. Like, that's it. Like, this was beat them at their own game. You know they're going to push up high, expose that, take the space that they give you. It's going to be there every single time. Portland did it. They deserve 3 points.
And you see the teams that have gone up against St. Louis this season that have handed them their losses, they've all done the same tactical plan. Sat in and caught them on their bad giveaways and bad areas and quick counterattack.
The other thing you can set your clock at is Portland will sign two attacking fullbacks and will bench one when the season is on the verge. It was Eric Miller at left back this time. Turns out you need one to defend.
Yeah.
You can't have both be attackers the entire time. We do have a question on Twitter from Daniel G42. He says, do you guys see City going after another DP striker this summer and filling that third DP spot? Klaus is out right now, which was a big loss, and it's only supposed to be about 2 weeks. Do you think St. Louis makes a big move here, sort of seeing the overall picture of what this season has been so far?
I don't know if you go out and get another DP striker. Like, I don't know. I'm thinking maybe you go get like a DP playmaker within this team. Not taking anything away from their midfield, because their midfield's been outstanding. Leuven, for me, has been one of my favorites in the league so far. Very underrated player, fantastic. Indiana Vasilev, kind of knowing his role.
Yeah, neither
not a true ten. So like but that is one thing that Bradley Carnell, right? Correct. Yeah. Sorry. Had said, and it was interesting. I was speaking to Chris Whittingham about this, and I said to Chris, what has he said about the midfield? And he said, look, Indiana Vasilev had to buy in. He wanted Indiana Vasilev to play as a six, and Indiana Vasilev looked at him and said, are you crazy? Like, I'm not a six. Yeah. And he said, look, I want my three midfielders, because we don't have that number 10 to be able to play all three positions. So it's almost just a rotating. My six can play my eight can play my 10, my 10 can play my six. And they bought into that. So I think for me, if I'm looking at this team, I'm not sure if I'm buying a DP striker, probably like a DP, like number 10, like a proper number 10.
I think the caveat to that is they do have the Firmino connection. If they can get
Bobby Firmino. Yeah.
if they can get Bobby Firmino, you do that. Because I think that there's proof of concept
Bob in
now.
St. Louis.
There's proof of concept now already within the community that St. Louis City is a big deal. They're going to sell out every game for the next 20 years. They sponsorships, you know, like at all the
you can bring your dog to the game.
You can bring your dog to the game, which is great.
That is the game changer. I mean, I was like, amazing.
We'll do extra time on the road. I'll bring Taquito and baby girl. You know, we'll do the.
They hang out with dogs.
They're pretty chill.
Okay, you know, cool.
Taquito is absolutely not chill. Yeah.
big win for Portland Timbers as they continue to roll on. As we say, St. Louis trying to find their feet once again. TFC finding their feet. 1-0 win over NYCFC. CJ Sapong in his debut scores. I believe this is his fifth MLS team debut in which he has scored. So he scored for SKC, Chicago,
really?
Nashville. Oh, maybe fourth.
I think
Philly was the only one he didn't score in his first game for them. And a pretty good game for the Italians as well. They feel comfortable. They look more comfortable at line.
The stat I picked up for that one for my column, Bernardeschi received 33 passes in the final third. Insigne received 25. Both season highs for them. And that's just Sapong.
Insigne looked good.
What's that?
Insigne looked good.
He did. Yeah.
Which was, if you give me space.
And that's what Sapong does. He's going to occupy the center backs. Like, he's not going to score 15 goals the rest of the year. Doesn't need to. If he scores six more goals the rest of the year and opens up space for those two guys to receive a combined 50, 65, you know, passes in the attacking third, Toronto's going to be good because Toronto also, like, they've had two bad games, but the rest of it, they don't give the ball away cheaply.
How many passes are from Richie Larea? Do you know that?
I
love him. I know he's Canadian, but
look
like
it up right now, Kaylin.
He has been,
he's been awesome.
Yeah. He's just the work rate on him, the ability to like overlap, underlap, the ball into it was him that put the ball in for CJ Sapong. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm pretty sure
it was him. Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
He just continues to like he just continues to impress me. And I just think it's a player that deserves more love.
He's a top three Nottingham Forest player in Major League Soccer, which unfortunately is an actual list that exists. This game kicked off 25 minutes late because of
Larea
a fire alarm.
Has completed 70 passes to Bernardeschi alone. Like that is one of the top fullback winger connections in the league.
25 minutes late because of a fire alarm that went off because of pregame fireworks, and then
poutine was burning. Something was going down.
Who's got the gravy? It was comical, but two teams recovered, I guess you could say. For NYCFC, this is the first of a 4-game road trip for them. They have not won a road game yet this season. That 4-game road trip includes a Hudson River Derby coming up, so this is a big stretch for them. Corey Clayton on Twitter asked, is something wrong with Talas Magno after he verbally jawed with Maxime Cheneau late versus TFC? Is that just frustration getting to him? Have MLS defenders figured him out and can he adapt? Or is it just general NYCFC, quote, no striker syndrome?
I think it's no striker syndrome. And I'm pulling up the numbers now, but I'm pretty sure most of his productivity as an MLS player came in the first 4 months of last season when he was playing off of Tati.
Mm-hmm. Tati's good. He scored 4 goals against Real Madrid.
He's pretty decent. Yeah.
I want him back. Yeah. I want him back.
St. Louis. There you go.
So I think that Talas Magno is still one of the most talented young players, attacking players, in this league. I think like he's just 20 years old.
Yeah.
I think he's going to end up being within the next 2 years, if he's not sold, he could end up being like best player on a title winning team level good. But right now, he's had to figure out how to play next to Tati, and then he's had to figure out how to play striker, and then he's had to figure out how to play next to Eber, and then he had to figure out how to play striker again, and then he had to figure out how to play off of Gabe Siegel, and now he's trying to figure out how to play off of Santi Rodriguez, who he himself is trying to figure out how to play as a false nine. That's a lot. 18 months.
Yeah. And no Gabe Pereira this game, which I think you lose something with Pellegrini out there instead. Let's move to the Midwest.
Why are you smiling?
Because we've got a city of underdogs. Miami, the biggest underdog in America.
Is that the Midwest? You just said.
Well, the game was in the Midwest.
Okay, I was going to say. Right. I love how I didn't catch that. I was like, yeah, Midwest.
Yeah. Miami, 2-1 win over Columbus. Leo Campagna back in the starting lineup. Joseph Martinez on the bench. Benjamin Kramaski, say his name. MLS Next legend. Yep. He had an assist, 18 years old, I believe the youngest player to record a goal or assist in Inter-Miami history. Not that long of history, so kind of makes sense. You feeling good?
Yeah.
Are they feeling good?
They should be feeling good. Phil Neville should be feeling good. I sent him a message after, and I was like, because he's always suited and booted, and he wore a tracksuit. I said, keep the tracksuit. It's your lucky charm right now. And so is Kramaski. And I love, sorry, I got hair stuck in here. Don't mind me, everyone. But he just added a different dynamic, and fair play to Phil Neville, because we saw Phil Neville do it last year with Gonzalo Higuain, dropped him when he wasn't performing and said, look, I don't care what you want. I don't care who you are. We need to win games. They were on a 6-game losing streak. So started Kramaski, dropped Rodolfo Pizarro, that hasn't been good since coming back from Mexico. He hasn't been good in the MLS since his debut, which is unfortunate because I feel like he does have the skill set. It just hasn't shown up. Capanna back fully healthy, finally getting, I think it was his third run since being back from injury, getting the brace on this one. Stefanelli looked different. Jean Mata looked different. Dixon Arroyo in the midfield.
The new piece to fill in for Gregory.
Yeah. He's that like-for-like swap with Gregory. I think Gregory is one of that key pieces, and everyone said, you know, we're losing games because of Gregory. No, you're not. You're not losing games because of one player on your team, your captain. Yes, he's a big pivotal player. 100%. But your big pieces also in that attacking third weren't stepping up. Yeah. And you can only defend for so long. So a huge win. I mean, in Columbus against a Wilfred Nancy side that loves, you know, loves to keep possession, loves to play with the ball. But Inter-Miami, give credit where credit's due. I think Kramaski has earned himself a starting 11 position and can only play himself out of it. Right. And Phil Neville is the one manager that will give an opportunity. This is what I do love about him. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter who you are. If you're performing, he will keep you on the pitch. And I'm delighted for Capanna as well, because he's really, really struggled with injuries since coming to America, in and out of the lineups. He's got to keep healthy. In order for Inter-Miami to be successful, they have to keep Capanna healthy. Like, literally wrap that man in bubble wrap in training sessions. Do whatever you need to do. But yeah, huge, huge, huge for Phil Neville, because they have their games coming up are outrageous as well, I think. Who do they have? Yeah, Atlanta United at home. Then they play their Open Cup, but then they play New England at home and Nashville away and Orlando City, then that derby as well. So it's going to be a huge, like a tough stretch of games for Inter-Miami. Yeah.
And they survived Open Cup this week, but that, look at what Orlando did last year. Like, that was their saving grace. Yeah. That kind of gave them the energy in the league, was their success in the Open Cup. Maybe Miami can copy that. Really tough day for Columbus. Degenek went out, I think, 9 minutes in with an injury. He seems to be the one center back they can't cover for. So we'll see what happens there. Cucho comes back. He gets a goal. Shout out to Golden Boot team, DG. I appreciate it, Cucho. We've been waiting for you for a while.
How nice was that
goal,
though?
Welcome back in. Come on.
He was like, I'm here.
Who
Don't
else?
Don't ever take me out again.
Who else in MLS scores that goal? Like, that was gorgeous. So 2-1 loss for them. Let's move on to Montreal beating SKC 2-0. We ordered these of who gets to do each one. I got both Canadian teams because I don't know. Now that an actual Canadian's on the show, Anders is leaning harder into the David's a fake Canadian type thing. But I'm okay.
You love Montreal. You said you went to Montreal last month and you were like, I could live here. Yeah.
And I would go every month if I could.
There you go.
Except for between October and March. But otherwise, I'd be there all the time if I could. And my favorite player in MLS is Mathieu Chouinard, who continues to perform at a high level. He's just a floor raiser. He has a little bit of everything in his game. We've seen him play fullback. We've seen him play wingback. We've seen him play center mid, deeper, more attacking. Goal and an assist, I believe, in this one. Great game from him.
Bryce Duke has been better than good. I thought
he's
would
good.
Be. Yeah, no, I
he
thought
is,
he,
but
I thought
is he a 10? Is he a true start every game 10? I didn't know that. If he is, and I'm still not sure.
I said it Inter-Miami, and it was because I'd seen him in training sessions. He just adds something to a side. He's very underrated. I think maybe because he's like that small number 10 where it's like you haven't really seen that in Major League Soccer for a while, but he's good in tight areas. He's good on the half turn. He's good at 1v1. He's still young in the way that sometimes he takes that extra touch or he forces that pass or he tries to take on that extra player. And I think that'll come.
Yeah.
And I think it'll come in Montreal where
He'll get chances.
You're not going to take him out of the lineup because you can't. You don't have any players in that team.
He takes every set piece. He gets every touch. Everything goes through him. So he's going to get that chance.
Anyway, so I'll have to say, well done, Bryce Duke.
Yeah. Well done, Bryce Duke. He scores in this one. And it's only because he's playing with Matthew Schweinert. Like, he's never played with a player of this quality.
Yeah,
so that's like a really big opportunity for him. Matt Skinner on Twitter asks, has a dual sporting director coach ever been fired midseason? Curious on how much change SKC fans should demand given that the org structure, and what your thoughts are in terms of how many losses it would take. We will dig in on SKC on Wednesday, because if my understanding is correct, they cannot lose another game between now and then. They're going to try based on the way this season has gone. They are in historic territory right now in terms of worst starts in MLS history.
Matt Skinner, are you an NWSL coach? I feel like Matt Skinner, that's an NWSL coach, or was. Well, I have to Google that. It's just the name.
I have a little NWSL in the mailbag here today.
Oh, we do. Yes. Cheeky little
vacuum. I don't
think
so. Nope. Matthew Skinner was a defender at UNCG.
Okay.
So you got that going. Shout out to Matt Skinner for getting on the show, by the way, of Charlotte, North Carolina. Let's do some quick ones here to close things out. Let's start in Orlando. Orlando 2-0 win over LA Galaxy. Scott Hubbard on Twitter asks, did Orlando find something, Doyle, or LA Galaxy just bad?
Yeah, I mean, that's literally the question I have coming out of this one, because beating the Galaxy, who were without Ricky Pooj, beating them at home is like, that's the minimum bar that you have for being a competent team.
That's why Weeby's out today. No Ricky Pooj. He doesn't do shows in weeks Ricky doesn't play.
For being a competent team in MLS, but for those who didn't watch the game, Orlando had been playing in kind of a 3-4-2-1 for most of the year. Oscar Pereja went to a 4-2-3-1 in this one. Mufaku Torres in to the as a number 10 from the right wing, put Martin Ojeda on the right wing. Ojeda had an assist.
He Faku should have scored.
Yeah, Faku had a goal. Urkakara had a goal and an assist. So that's your DPs actually, you know, producing, which is something that has not happened. I thought they looked pretty solid defensively as well. They weren't great. And again, it was without Ricky Pooj. It'll be tough to have a take on this one until we see another game or two to know if this is okay, Orlando's found something now, or to know if this is like, no, they're just facing a weak opponent at home and they did what you should do against a weak opponent.
You know what Carr is doing to you right now? Silencing you.
He's just the crowd at a home game.
Yeah,
after scoring.
I mean, the Orlando fans are not high on him. And to be fair, it doesn't seem like
where do they get that from? He's a DP forward who doesn't play.
Right. So Oscar Pereja is clearly not high on him either. But Orlando fans, I think, booed at the end of the last home game, which was that loss to DC United. Right. So like
3-1 loss,
3-1 loss at home. And they like, Orlando has not played well at home for a good long while. So the fans have been letting the players hear about it. I like that Kara did that.
I don't know, man.
If you're doing it, I don't mind it. I don't mind it, especially if the fans are like going at you. But you better show up every single week, because if you don't, those Orlando City fans will crucify you. Yeah. I've played there.
Yeah.
That's some serious Orlando energy of like, well, just us against everyone, even our own fans. Like, Cara, let someone be in your camp. It hasn't been the easiest time for you. Didn't work out for him on that one. Minnesota closing out the weekend 0-0, hosting FC Dallas. That one was on Sunday night. So all of us had a chance to watch, which includes you, Kayla and Kyle.
The wine was flowing. Let me just say that in the attacking.
Connor on Twitter asked, what's going on with their final touch? Should they go back to the 4-4-2?
I genuinely don't think it matters what formation they play. And I think Adrian, he's done a good job. They need a number nine. I mean, that was so evident last night. They should have won that game. Yeah. They had three incredible opportunities in the first 45 minutes, two in the second 45 minutes. But even the opportunities where it's offside, I mean, you have players like Amarilla, excuse me. I probably should know that.
Well, but if he's not going to score, you don't have to learn it.
But not even getting it on target. Menda Garcia as well. Like, how are you in an offside position with no defenders around you and you're not even getting it on target then? Like, for me, this is the lack of quality in the final third. There's only so much you can do as a midfielder, as a backline.
Robin Ludd is doing most of what he can.
The most underrated player. But the thing with Robin Ludd is he's actually better since Emmanuel Reynoso has not come back. He's better in the midfield, but Adrian Heath can't play him there, though, because that's where they do have their depth. But you see when Robin Lowe does roll inside, he's been phenomenal. He's that playmaker. I think Sunbin Jeong has been good. He still needs to get that 90-minute match performance, but I think maybe a player that You can push them a little bit higher up the field if you do get another piece to the puzzle, but they have to go out and find a proven goal scorer in order to like take it to that next step of Major League Soccer. Like there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, they're grinding out as much results as they can. Yeah. They have not won, I believe, in four straight for Dallas.
And at home, like at home, that place is amazing. Like they still haven't sang Wonderwall. Like that will be sitting on the players and Adrian Heath right now because the fans there, when they're winning at home, it's like, such a difficult place.
Not a good song.
What?
Yeah. Doyle's
You're not never, an Oasis fan?
No.
Doyle's never been in the building, though, when they sing it.
That's fair.
It's right. worth the experience.
We're taking extra time on the road, baby. I'll get us tickets. I got a hook up there.
Oh, you can get us tickets to a Minnesota United game? What?
I'll get you a jersey.
Yeah, we'll kit Doyle out. We'll make it the full experience. We'll pretend Doyle wrote a letter as a kid. It's always been my dream to go to a Minnesota United game. We'll do the whole thing for you.
Doyle's singing the national anthem. Never mind.
Sticking in the Midwest. Chicago 1-1 draw against New York Red Bulls again. 89th minute goal for Chicago against. This time it was Corey Burke, so they're not able to see out another lead. Kai Kamara though with the goal in the first half.
What a goal!
Love him
behind landed. He is 5 yards off the near post.
Yeah,
and heads it into the top corner
and just towering.
Suke was really good as well.
Yep.
Created a couple chances. Juntolke.
He and Kai have like real good chemistry. Just like reading the. Run, cross, like it looks like they've been playing together for 10 years.
It helps when he megs John Tolkien 3 times in the run of play. I've never seen that happen to John Tolkien. So, you know, condolences to JMI there. Hopefully it gets better for him.
Condolences to all of New Jersey. That is a bad luck for New Jersey.
Let's move to Salt Lake City, RSL 0-0 against Seattle. Doyle, what'd you take away from this one?
RSL did a better job of staying compact through central midfield than they did beginning of March when these two teams played. It was Seattle versus Orange Cones. RSL just did it. So they did a better job of being tougher to break down. They're more dangerous now with Savarino on one side and Gomez on the other of that 4-4-2. I don't think they have enough final third quality to make a big push. I think that this coming week is going to be tough for them because Ruiz got that red card. He's key to them spreading the field. Like they hit a million diagonals. He's the one who hits them. But it was, you know, it's a good point. Seattle are slumping a little bit. They could use an attacking left back. Like looking at this team, they played without Nuhu. Kellen Rowe came in and played left back. Kellen Rowe's a good veteran.
I think he got hurt very badly.
Yeah.
I think it might be for the season, but not confirmed yet for Kellen.
Yeah. So, and that's a bummer because he's been good. But like, even with him in there, it's a little unbalanced and it's not like they're still leaving something on the table. And I wonder, like, is it going to be Ethan Dabeler, the academy kid who they've been converting to kind of a wing back over the years, or Reed Baker Whiting, who's actually a year or two younger and considered to have a much higher upside. I think you probably see him starting at right back for the USU 20s, but he could play either side. So Seattle has some stuff to figure out. I still have him second in the power rankings. This is still one of the very best teams. It's a long season. Teams go through this point on the road is good by definition.
Chu is playing well. There seems to be a little bit of confusion of what he does best and how to use him in his minutes. Yep. And there's a whole conversation around there. Let's stay in Cascadia, Vancouver 0-0 at home against the Colorado Rapids. Great goalkeeping performance.
I'm smiling right now, you guys, because I was just doing this and I'm not great in math. I was never good in school. I can barely read off a teleprompter. Let's just be completely honest. And so I had to go back and double check this. But Vancouver are like slowly just creeping up, like very unannounced.
Way.
It is. But like started their season off 2 losses, Real Salt Lake, San Jose. They're undefeated in their last 7 and 4 clean sheets. That's extremely impressive. Like if they can, my thing with Vancouver, if they want to continue to make a push and actually be a team where people are, you know, nervous to go and play up in Vancouver on the road, they've scored 11 goals, so not bad. But if they can find an out-and-out goal scorer for this team, 4 clean sheets, like if White...
Sergio Cordova is coming back.
Cordova.
I thought it was Cordova.
Oh, I thought you said a whole third-party name.
No.
I heard Controva. And I was like, I don't know who that is. This is a designated player signing.
This Sergio is a designated. Cordero. He had 10 goals in all competitions.
Huge
last
player in Major League Soccer.
I'm with Kalen, though.
I'm kind of shocked. Sorry, I'm like a little bit. I'm like, wait, hold on a minute, Vancouver.
It feels like Brian White has 2 weeks to keep his job.
Exactly.
He's done a really good job of finding chances. He needs to finish more of them. Like, I think in the long run, he's still a good MLS striker, but like this team has higher ambitions now. They're playing in a way that suggests those ambitions are realistic. If they can have a number nine who puts those chances away, he's not doing it.
It's weird that you were going to skip Simon Betcher there because I thought he was your guy. I love a college draft pick center forward. Brian White was that, but what have you done for me lately in the Matt Doyle household?
That's fair. I also love Sergio Cordova.
Yeah, we're not sure about that. So we're just going to move on. Austin 2-2 home draw against San Jose. He lives. Rigoni, risen.
Stop.
Conquering all in Major League Soccer. Rodney Redes with an assist. Rigoni with the goal. Driussi with the goal. It all works in Austin. And that's all you need to know about this game. San Jose couldn't hang on to two separate leads. Austin gets a 2-2 draw. Big game coming up for them this weekend. And on that, we've got a lot of mailbag that we're going to save for Wednesday for Andrew Wiebe to come back. There's a lot of things to talk about that make no sense and cannot be proven. And that is Andrew's favorite thing to do.
See, you are funny and you are witty. You're proving my point here.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
He's more of an insult comic just when it comes to Andrew.
Observational as well. I'm from New York. We kind of are all the same person at times. Shout out to Bella Bixby, by the way. Is she actually a striker, goalkeeper for the Portland Thorns?
Two goals in a professional career as a goalkeeper and a back heel to make it her second.
At what point do you do the like David James Jorge Campos? Like, I'll play 45 in goal, but then I want to be switched up front.
No, you want her in your net. She's crazy in the best way possible. She's a great goalkeeper. Seriously.
Shout out to Bella then.
Shout out, Bella. It was
come
all
hang out
seriously.
Or don't. I'm not sure.
No, hang out with us. Being crazy is a great thing. I'm crazy. You guys like me, right?
So for myself,
crickets,
myself, David Goss, Matt Doyle, NYCFC biggest supporter here, Kaylin Kyle, K2. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching whatever form you consume this. And we'll see you again quite soon.